The House will come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
If you can hear my voice, welcome to Capital Ideas. This is the podcast where members of the majority Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. I know I say pretty much every time that this is a great episode or a must listen or something similar. And it's true. But today, this is one you don't want to miss. Just take my word for it and stick around. Today's conversation is with yet another first-year member of the House, Representative Natasha Hill from the 3rd District, which means Spokane. She's vice chair of the Housing Committee, sits on a couple of other key committees, is a lawyer, and this is the first elective office that she's held. She'll tell you all the details in a minute, so that's all you're getting from me. We sat down and talked on Thursday, March 20th, 2025, and this is it. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Natasha Hill from the wonderful 3rd District in Spokane, Washington.
Thank you for having me.
This is your first session as a state lawmaker. It's your first Capital Ideas podcast. I don't know which is more exciting to you, but we'll find out. I want to find out who you are.
That's a broad question. When I think about who I am in this role, I feel like I'm here to represent for people from my district in Spokane. But who I am in terms of how I got here, I grew up in Spokane, born and raised. I'm the fifth generation in my family to grow up in the Hilliard neighborhood on the north side of Spokane. We come from generational poverty, where an opportunity like this was not even a thought in my mind. Not even after I finished high school and did the Running Start program. I went to community college, so I was able to get an AA degree and transfer into four-year. Came over to Seattle, UW. Went on to law school afterward down in Southern California. And even after practicing for 10 years, politics was not really on my radar. It took me moving back home to Spokane after being gone 15 years with two kids that I had when I was in California to get involved in community work. We had COVID hit. We had a civil rights resurgence. I saw what happened to George Floyd and how that really motivated people to want to see big system changes. And that got me out in my community organizing, and it's kind of what led me to think about running for office and seeing what more we could do as a community in Spokane.
Before you were elected to the State House of Representatives, had you been a city council member? Had you been active in civil rights organizations, for example?
Well, my background as an attorney, I practiced civil litigation. I did a little bit of civil rights work with employment discrimination, retaliation cases that I handled. But I was really new to all of this in 2020 when I got out and started protesting with my community. I had never run for office. I had never worked with anybody in office, but I got to know some electeds, including Tim Ormsby and Marcus Riccielli. So that was my first venture into thinking about politics. And then I just went all in. Andy Billig, former Senate Majority Leader, decided not to run again for his Senate seat. So Marcus Riccielli from the 3rd decided to step up and run for Senate. And that seat that he left behind was the seat I ran for and did win.
Well, we're glad you're here. I'm glad you're here with the microphone in front of you as well. I want to talk now about your legislative career. Brief though it may be, I don't know if this is 75 days into the 2025 session. I know that there's 105 days, and we're certainly in the last third. It's getting exciting. But speaking of exciting, I want to talk about some of your bills. Some of your bills have made it to the Senate. That's the mark of success for a member of the House, because if it doesn't get out of the House by a certain date, which is passed, then that bill is dead, at least for the year.
You know, having four bills actually get to the floor and get voted and passed out, like you said, that felt like a huge success. So I had four bills that made it over to the Senate. The one in particular that I am really proud of is a tribal health board bill, where some legislation Marcus Riccielli had worked on had put tribal members on our local health boards. However, the intent was not made clear enough in that bill that passed, and so we needed to do a little bit of a cleanup job to make sure that we got representation for each tribe in that region, not one for all, but one for each. And so that bill is headed to the Senate for hearing. And it's going to directly impact a local organization in Spokane called Native Project. The Native Project actually stepped up to really help with vaccinations during COVID, saving lives across our community. And it was something that our local health board did not prioritize. And because they didn't have a seat at the table, they had to manage this on their own with less resources and a bigger rush. So ultimately, this bill is going to make sure they have that representation. They can be part of the game planning from the beginning. And that way, when we have these health crises, communities of color and low-income communities don't suffer. The Native Project is very attuned to that, representing our Indigenous communities, but their reach and support went well beyond that, including helping to get our first responders vaccinated to make sure that they could continue to be there to care for our community. So that bill in particular, you mentioned me being a lawyer, and I did get an agency request on another Secretary of State bill where we're cleaning up some service of process issues to make sure folks know who to serve, where to serve, and there's no confusion that would allow attorneys, unfortunately, to have to spend more time, which just costs more money, more billing, in order to allow people to get the notice out for lawsuits and service, so there's no confusion there. So those are just a couple of the things that are moving forward in the Senate, and we're looking forward to getting signed into law this year.
Those are two perfect examples of the kinds of legislation that get passed down here. One has just such a direct A to B human element to it, and then the other is very detailed. It's got to happen. It's a technical bill. Most people don't care, but the people that it matters to do care. This is what y'all do down here.
Yeah, great. That's a great dichotomy, too, to point out that we've got the technical procedural stuff, and then we got the people policy stuff.
Here's one that combines both of those things, and that has to do with condo insurance for relatively affordable housing units. I see the human element, and I also see the purely technical aspect to it.
Yeah, well, one of the main focuses we have to address our housing crisis is building up supply. And we know that we're missing a lot of that middle growth that we need. So we have more affordable units that people can own. When you own a unit, when you own a home, that's where you can build generational wealth. That's where you can leverage an asset. And so what we're studying, this bill is to study insurance options. Insurance is one of the highest cost drivers for building condominium units. And condominiums are a great way to allow for home ownership, a starter home, a home that you can downsize to after you've lived in your dream home and still be accessible and in close to services. So where we can build our condominiums is really important in filling that gap in our housing supply. And so studying what is making insurance so expensive that builders do not want to build, particularly here in Washington State with our requirements and liability for builders, we got to get this right. And so the great part about this bill is it's not coming out of our operating budget. It's coming out of the Office of Insurance Commissioner, who's going to pay for this study to make sure we can give our builders more options for insurance to reduce those costs so we can build more units. Until we can build more units and more homes for folks, we're going to continue to see, you know, more unhoused folks, more safety and public health issues in our community. Housing is one of the biggest factors when it comes to health and safety and stability for our community members. So we really, really are focused on that. So this is just one piece of legislation to help us get there as quickly as we can.
I wish you the best of luck on that bill. Talking about the condo bill gives us a good segue into one of your roles here, which is vice chair of the House Housing Committee. That's a crucial committee in Washington where we need, I think it's 2 million housing units in the next 20 years. What's going on in housing this year?
You know, we've got such a huge call to action here. We've got to meet the demands of what's happening across Washington. So supply is one of the issues that we're trying to tackle, and the condo bill that we just talked about is one of the ways that we're addressing that. The other thing we have to do is keep people in their homes until we can meet that supply and build enough units. That's going to take years and years. So in the interim, we've passed off the House floor the rent stabilization bill. There's been a lot of controversy around this bill, but it's great to see housing providers step up and say, you know what, 7% is going to keep us whole. It's going to keep us solvent while helping stabilize the market and make sure that we keep community members in their homes. Everybody loses money with turnover, so it doesn't help to price people out of their homes. Then it just puts a bigger burden on other housing options that right now we just simply don't have available. We need to make sure we keep people in their homes. And so it took a lot of really, really smart folks who've been here a lot longer than I have to come up with something that we could get through the House. So that bill's on to the Senate, where I understand it's in good hands. And we're looking to get that one signed into law. This is going to help stabilize our market, which is a great way to help improve our economy. If we have some certainty and stability in the housing market, then people can feel comfortable spending their money elsewhere. And we know that there's uncertainty coming from the federal level. So as much certainty and stability that we can get while still looking out for the real estate market and our housing providers so they stay solvent is what we have to do now to make sure we take care of Washingtonians across our state.
That has been one of the most high-profile bills of this session, which has been marked by several high-profile bills. It's a key year.
Yeah.
I want to talk about another one of your bills that I don't believe made it to the Senate, but I find it real interesting, and that has to do with diapers.
Yes. We know that diapers are expensive. One of the things that our state does a really great job of is making sure that we fund diaper banks across our state. Unfortunately, the bill didn't move through, and it had the best of intentions to say, hey, we don't want to task and burden nonprofits to have to respond to the RFP process, the request for proposal process, for us to give them the money that we're going to have already for our diaper banks across the state. So the goal with the bill was to change that into a budget proviso, a line item in our budget that gets funded year to year, so that we don't have to go through this RFP process that takes up time and resources from the nonprofits across our state that are going to be helping get diapers into our communities for families who need them. By reducing that cost and making sure we have what folks across our community need, it again feeds back into our economy and really helps support families at a time where costs are going to be unpredictable when you have little ones. So even though the bill didn't move forward, we're hopeful. We know the money is still going to be apportioned there so we can meet that need. I don't believe that's one of the things we're looking at being cut significantly, but we are going to help clean up that process and bring that bill back next session.
That's the second diaper bill of this year. Representative Hunt had one to install diaper changing stations in newly constructed and newly renovated public buildings.
We want to make sure that families can go anywhere and have access to what they need. We think about the American dream. We think about being able to have a family, that it means having kids. And whether you're a mom or a dad or any kind of parent, if you got to get your kid changed, having to lay a kid out on the floor, which is not sanitary, is not the best place. There was some interesting pushback, though, on that bill, if you remember. They were concerned about folks hiding drugs in the baby changing stations. This was not something I was actually super familiar with, but hell, what do I know? You can hide drugs anywhere. The ability to hide drugs somewhere should not take away from filling a need, a practical need that families not only want, but are going to keep kids a little bit safer, more sanitary conditions, and my goodness, the convenience of it all. So I think, again, it's really important that we have that as a standard for newly built bathrooms, and any issues that we have with folks wanting to store their drugs in there, we can find other ways to deal with that. So I do appreciate my fellow freshman, Representative Hunt, for bringing that bill forward.
Natasha, I thought I had heard everything. This just goes to show that you need to listen every day because there's always going to be something new and ridiculous. What kind of puzzles do you like?
I'm a big fan of word searches. In fact, I don't know if you heard, but one of the things that I did during Black History Month to really celebrate the fact that we have the largest legislative Black caucus in the Western United States, I put together a word search with all of our names. During Black History Month on President's Day, we had children here, and so I was able to hand those out to some of our community members and kids that got a visit just to really bring that representation factor and celebrate some history that we made this last election cycle, getting 14 Black members into our legislative body, both between Senate and House.
It is impressive. But at this point, I will say we're running out of time. I've got a half hour of your time, and we're close to that now. How would you like this podcast to end?
You know, I think it's important as a new member that I share back what I learned or what I've learned so far, even though we're not all the way through the process. And I didn't realize as just a voter and a constituent reaching out to my electeds, how significant me, you know, sharing my story or sharing my opinion, whether I'm pro or whether I'm con on something, I didn't know where it really went. So being on the other side of that, now I know where it goes. And I want folks to know it matters. When you send me your stories, when you send me what you're for and against, and I get to see that, I have to live with that knowledge. It also allows me to go and make sure our district is heard on policy and procedure. So I think part of me is just wanting people to know that it matters. Collective voice, collective action is what makes a difference. Me being here is not what's going to change things. It's me bringing as many people to the table through my office to have their voices heard, to make sure that they're weighing in on our policies that we're making and the bills that we're putting through. So just know how important it is that you stay engaged in this process. Don't let anyone deter you from using your voice, from using your vote, and reaching out to your legislators, whether that's the House members, the Senate members, and don't forget about the governor's office. We can all work together to make this the best place, but we cannot do it if we're not informed by the people that we represent. So please keep showing up. Know that it matters. It may not always feel that we hear you and that we see you, but I want to reassure folks that you are what makes this machine run. I am in the house of the people, and the people are what matter, and I need as many people involved so I can lift up their voices. So please, please, please keep reaching out and stay engaged.
That may be the most inspiring 2 minutes of Capital Ideas I've heard in a long time, and I've been doing this podcast for 17 years. Thank you, Representative Natasha Hill. This has been a great conversation, and I wish you the best of luck.
I appreciate it. I will take any opportunity to speak with you and share ideas with Capital Ideas that I can.
Thank you. I don't want to be one of those people who says, I told you so, but you have to admit I did. Now you know Representative Natasha Hill from Spokane, Washington. If you've subscribed to Capital Ideas, that's wonderful. If you haven't, here's your chance. Just head for your favorite podcast aggregator or visit the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and click on Media at the top. Then hit Capital Ideas in the drop-down menu, and it's pretty clear from there. What we talk about here is your state legislature, and what happens here matters. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889, the year Johns Hopkins Hospital co-founder, internist William Osler, originated the concept of a residency for training junior doctors. Thanks for your time.